Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. After the derecho hit on August 10th, as soon as the winds died down and people began to take stock of the damage, neighbors started helping neighbors, clearing trees from roads, caring for children, sharing food and generators. We saw these acts of kindness in all of the communities impacted by the storm. And when word got out about the devastation in Linn County, people from all over Iowa and even other states were moved to help. There have been so many acts of kindness and so many helpers that we can only share a few stories this hour, but you are welcome to join the conversation and share your stories of people who've gone above and beyond. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. And later this hour, I'll talk with Lemmy Tillihoon of Refugee Rise. He helped to organize aid for people in Cedar Rapids refugee community, many of whom were left homeless by the storm. We'll talk with the leaders of the Chainsaw Gang, Matt Jorgensen and Channing Smith of North Liberty, and Kristen Roberts, the CEO of the United Way of East Central Iowa. And of course, they've been organizing volunteers and giving relief all over the place. To start the hour, Patrick Rashad of Caribbean Kitchen is here, and as soon as he could, he sprang into action and took his food truck to areas where it was needed most. He fed thousands of people for free. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Charity. Nice to talk to you.
Well, wonderful to have you here. And first of all, you were out working when this storm hit. Tell me what you experienced.
Yes, I was. It was just a typical day doing lunch. I was actually at my son's work at McGrath Auto, and we were just finishing up for the day, and it started to be a little breezy, and I was expecting a typical Iowa afternoon storm, and maybe I'll be back out that afternoon, and the wind started picking up and it never stopped.
Yeah.
And my son was asking me to come inside, but I really did not, I wasn't comprehending the severity of what was happening, because I just thought it was just going to be passing fairly rapidly.
So you actually moved your truck. And
I did.
You rode this all out in your truck?
Yes, me and my niece, we rode it all out in the truck. So so what happened, it felt like it was dying down, so I wanted to get my niece home to safety. And I saw some cars driving, so I decided to move my truck to get my niece home. And that was a bad idea. Immediately when I left the lot, the winds picked up. I think I was in the strongest part of it, because as soon as I took off, it felt like the wind was trying to push my truck over. And so I immediately tried to find a cross street so the wind would be at the back of the truck, and I found one, and all I kept thinking was, I need to find a safe space, a safe spot to park my truck. And it was like I was in the movies. Everything slowed down. There was debris flying. I was trying to avoid things in the road. And what must have felt like an hour, it was only 10 minutes. I finally found a spot for us to park, and the wind was still whipping by, and my niece was crying, and I was praying, and it was pretty bad. And I'm not being hyperbolic here. It was probably one of the worst experiences I've ever been through, and I hope I never go through something like that again.
I think we know you're not being hyperbolic about this storm. and I also need to ask, how did your house come through this?
Well, there's probably a 3 foot by 5 or 6 foot hole in the side of the house, and my roof is pretty much destroyed. It's livable, but it definitely needs to be replaced, and my truck was totaled. But this is like so many other stories of people in Cedar Rapids and the surrounding area, so I'm not alone.
No, but you have your house damaged, you've come through this storm, and your first thought was, how can I feed people?
Yes, after the initial, every day I was going through post-traumatic stress because I literally didn't know what to do after it all happened. And I was just sitting in a parking lot. And I decided to try to get my vehicle back to the warehouse. And I think I was about 10 minutes away from the warehouse, and it took me 2 hours to get back.
Wow.
There were trees everywhere. I mean, the extent of the damage, it was just, I have never seen anything like it. People were trying to get through roads that were blocked off, so hundreds of cars had to turn around. I mean, it was just incredible. And I got back to the warehouse, and someone called me, one of my customers, and said, she's hungry and the children are hungry, and do I have any food I could bring her? And so what, something to eat, and it took about an hour and a half to get to them.
Wow. So immediately, you were probably one of the first people to realize how much hunger was going to grow out of this storm.
Yeah. And so the next day I decided to bring my truck out, and I was still selling food, but I was offering anyone who came up they can have something to eat. And people kept trying to pay. No one would accept it because Iowans, I think, we're proud and resilient, and we're used to giving and not taking. And so after that, I just decided that, you know what, you're not allowed to pay. You have to just take it. And people starting to hear about what I was doing. And I didn't expect, I mean, I've never been in this type of situation before. And people just started donating. And an app called Deets App, they started to offer funds that I could use to pay for groceries. And then
you were just planning to do this all yourself. I mean, you were serving hundreds of meals and just paying for that out of your own pocket.
I was, because it was something that needed to be done. I felt that the community had supported me throughout the pandemic, and so many events that I was going to go to canceled, and the community kept supporting me. And so it was the least I could do.
You have kind of an interesting background for a person who runs a food truck. You have a
yes.
master's degree in social work. And I know that for the lifetime of your food truck, you have always provided food to people who are hungry, who can't pay. Do you feel like running your food truck is part of your mission as a social worker as well?
It is. I was a licensed therapist for a few years, but I loved cooking. And every time I was in the office, I kept thinking about, you know, farmers markets. I did Iowa City Farmers Market, and I just kept thinking about it, and I couldn't. It was just something I loved doing. And then I was in Yibo's City Market. I was one of the first vendors there. And I decided to just do cooking full time. And yes, I felt that if someone had the courage enough to ask me for something to eat, I have to let them have, because it's something that, you know, takes a lot of courage, and you have to give up a lot of pride to ask someone to feed you for free. And I would give it to them, no questions asked.
You did accept support after people kept offering and offering and offering to help you feed people.
People are so nice.
Right. You ended up serving, you think, about 3,500 meals?
I did. I kind of lost count after a while. I'm just estimating by the number of to-go boxes I went through. World Central Kitchen had me deliver food for them, and then I would go out on my own and feed people. And at one point I was feeding about 800 people in one day, and I made things that can be served really quickly, like rice bowls and and curries and gumbo, and, you know, topped with, you know, chicken and different sauces. So I wanted to be able to move the food really quickly. And I'm used to doing that because I did concerts and festivals where, you know, you have to move the food pretty quickly. So this actually, this was kind of made for me to be able to go out and serve people.
As people are starting to get back on their feet, and we know that there is a small number still without power, people are still dealing with so much of the hardship of this storm. But does it feel like you can take a deep breath and maybe a rest and work on your house now?
I'm starting to deal with the insurance adjusters and everything. What I did was when the storm first happened, I just buttoned up what I could, and then I started to go out, and I've been up at 4 a.m. for the past 2 weeks every morning, and I think I went to bed around 11 or 12, and I just didn't have time to deal with my own personal stuff, but I'm like just like so many other people who helped. I'm just one of, you know, hundreds of people who took time out of their life to help Iowans, and I'm so proud of our city, Cedar Rapids, and all the people who went out to help the neighbors. And I truly believe that you know, God can make beauty out of ashes, and I can see that all around me, how we're all getting together as neighbors and helping each other. And oddly enough, it seemed like there's so many positives that are coming out of this situation. It's really cool to see.
Well, thank you for helping so many people during this, Pat.
Thank you, Charity. I appreciate it.
Patrick Rashad of Caribbean Kitchen. His food truck has been traveling around the Cedar Rapids area, feeding literally thousands of people for free over the last couple of weeks, helping people get back on their feet after the terrible derecho of August 10th. We're going to talk with more helpers throughout this hour, and you are welcome to share your stories at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're meeting some of the helpers, the people who really made a difference in the wake of the August 10th derecho. And of course, there are so many helpers and heroes that we can only share a handful of stories today. But you are welcome to send your story to our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also give us a call. 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. And by now, I think most of us have seen the terrible damage the storm inflicted on Cedar Ridge Apartments. We know now about the people left homeless and without help, many of them refugees who suddenly felt like they were back in the refugee camps they had come from. For days after the storm, they waited for help, but it didn't seem like it was coming. And when people did learn about what was going on, help did come. And one of the helpers is Lemmy Tillahoon. He is community school coordinator with Hoover Community School, focused on the community-based school initiative. He's also a program supervisor with Refugee Rise, and he is on the line with me now. Lemmy, hello.
Hello, Charity. Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And it was, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 days after the storm hit when people started hearing about that apartment complex and other apartment complexes that were so badly damaged that people were left homeless, sleeping out in the open or in tents on the lawn. Can you tell me when you first became aware that so many people who are part of this diaspora, this refugee community in Cedar Rapids, were impacted?
Yeah. So Monday morning at about 10 a.m., I was actually at Cedar Terrace Apartments as part of an outreach program we were doing for Hoover Community School with the Return to Learn Plan. Majority of the families that lived in that complex, their kids attended Hoover School. And so I was there with my team, the community-based school team, explaining to parents what the return to learn plan is going to be like, sort of the procedures and the protocols that we have adopted for COVID. And just right around 11:45-ish, we heard some sirens. So we packed up our table and we had some laptops out where families were registering their kids back to school. And with a 2-minute drive to Hoover Community School, and within those 2 minutes, it was the entire world changed. The typical sunny, kind of hot day, and just right as my team and I arrived at the school, it was just chaos from there. Yeah. So,
you saw this Cedar Terrace Apartments, and what did it look like to you? I mean, you thought that you would be finding casualties.
Yeah, I honestly, after everything kind of had settled down and stopped raining, I drove by and it was still a bit dark. And I didn't think anyone survived. So I just kind of drove back to my home and to check on everything there. Devastated, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody. Phones were down. So, later in the evening, some of my team members have gone out and also can see the same thing and just were in pure disbelief. So we the next morning, I just went door to door to check on my team, see how everything was going. And then we went to Cedar Terrace and these other complexes just throughout the day. And we've been going for the following, 14 days. We've been on the ground there, just dealing with various issues that we didn't even see coming.
In the wake of a disaster like this, I think that the inequities in our society become very stark. So, of course, everybody who was in the path of this derecho lost something and suffered. But you're working with families who've lost everything and don't have the kind of resources to draw on to really start to rebuild. This must have been really difficult to deal with for individuals who had already rebuilt their lives from nothing.
Yeah, the vulnerabilities were there already. And, for many, this isn't the first time they're starting over. And this isn't the first disaster that they've been a part of. A family that we were working with very closely had survived their island sinking and their climate refugees and their island sinking, and then had gone over to the mainland or bigger island in Guam, and then survived a typhoon there, made their way to Iowa, to Cedar Rapids, Cedar Terrace Apartments, and then all of a sudden, this comes up, and it was very triggering for a lot of folks. And it was hard for anyone to go anywhere because the very little belongings that survived the storm, folks were really afraid to leave it because that was everything that they had could be gone. And the inequities that become really stark is some families have lost documentation. Some families have lost their mobility, not just like their vehicles, but without like proper ID and documentation, it was difficult for them to even do anything. And so out of all of this, the silver lining is the community's outpour into how they've, as soon as the world heard, the world was there at Cedar Terrace, and it was great to see. But it's certainly been overwhelming as well for the residents, because many of them have not figured out, it just has not processed as to where the help is coming from and how and why. After having gone so many days, waiting for help. And so you add an unexpected storm on top of already pre-existing epidemics from just lack of access to resources. There's also linguistic diversity, so that's a barrier. There's lots of cultural and social barriers. We had some residents who are elderly and did not have the language acquisition to be even ask for help. Many families were stuck in these crumbling buildings, and they were trying to call first responders, you know, fire and police, and they couldn't get through. So it was pretty devastating to see. And the fact that it even took that long, I'm well aware of the storm's effect on all of all members of our community, but particularly this one was heavy and heartbreaking because of the fact that many residents felt like they just didn't have a place they belonged, and felt abandoned because of the lack of low response, and many were very understanding because seeing what's around them, what their world was like, they also, you know, were operating with the same assumption that that's how badly everyone else was hit too. And so they were pretty compassionate in understanding that.
Now, of course, for a lot of people in the area, they needed help immediately after the storm. These families are going to need help for a lot longer. What's the next step?
That's a very good question. The next step is not a simple one. We have to figure out a way in which we have the voices and members of the community, their input included in local decision making. So out of the work, my team and I with other community-based organizations and those particular community leadership had moved forward to get a coalition together called Emerging Communities Crisis Coalition, which features residents of the apartment complexes that were impacted, some of the community leaders from these refugee and immigrant communities and others and their neighbors, as well as key players in the city, county, and state government. And the hope for this is that the community can advise our city and state government and county government ways that effective help could be provided for them, not just short term, but also long term. We've identified the key priority areas, in which one is obviously temporary shelter, storage while they're in transition, and then in the medium term, some of the support services for during this time of transition. And then the long term is stable, accessible, and safe housing for all the residents as they begin to be relocated into better situations. Particularly the housing is a big priority for the coalition, because access to stable and safe housing, research shows that is pivotal. It's critical in every aspect of our lives that affects us. So the community is putting together their input to be able to find it and still stay very close to the community that they're familiar with.
And of course, the impact on the schools further complicates this as well. That's something to talk about probably on another day. But you do still need assistance. The Greater Cedar Rapids Community Foundation is offering assistance, and people can donate through that organization. You mentioned the ECCC. Then there's also Embark, which is based in Des Moines, and they've been working with you. Catherine McCauley Center has been working with you. So many organizations coming together. Lemmy, thank you so much for sharing that story with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, Charity. It's good to be with you.
Nice to talk with you, too. And thank you so much for making such a difference. Lemmy Tillahoon is a community school coordinator with Hoover Community School. He's focused on community-based school initiative. He's also a program supervisor with Refugee Rise and has been working very hard over the last 2 weeks to assist people who've lost so much after the August 10th storm. Now, of course, in recovery, chainsaws have been an essential tool. And Matt Jorgensen and Channing Smith, realtors with Keller Williams Legacy Group, who live in North Liberty, grabbed some chainsaws and sprang into action right after the storm. They are the leaders of what has been dubbed the Chainsaw Gang. And to date, they have cleared over 130 yards. Matt, hello.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having us.
And Channing, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Matt, tell me, how did this get started?
So for me, it all started with, one friend. Like you said, we're both from North Liberty. And while we had, some strong winds down there, we didn't have, nearly the damage that Cedar Rapids has had. I started looking on social media when, after the storm had hit, and I kept seeing posts in Cedar Rapids about people that needed help, and one of those happened to be a longtime friend of mine, and I really just wanted to go up and help him. And the second I got up to Cedar Rapids and saw the damage, I called Channing shortly after, because I knew he'd be helping as well, because that's just what the guy does. He's a helper. But we kind of just teamed up after that, and it started with friends and past clients that we were trying to help out with. But we continued to post on social media every day about what we were doing and kind of asking who needed help and who wanted to help us, and everything kind of just snowballed from there. People wanted to help us, and people were sending us addresses of people that needed help, and we've been working hard ever since.
Yeah, and I'm sure that your chainsaw skills are only getting better with each passing day. Channing, are you surprised by how quickly this grew?
Absolutely. One of the things that I joke about is my first time picking up a chainsaw was the day of the derecho. And I literally read the instruction manual, and people are probably going to cringe at this. I read the instruction manual in front of a client's house of the do's and the don'ts, and then went into the backyard and started to go to work. And I've learned quite a lot over the last 2.5 weeks.
Wow. I'm sure you could teach a class by now. So I mentioned you've cleared over 130 yards. So people just kept saying, hey, we need help. You guys kept going. Matt, what happens next?
That's a really good question, and we've had a lot of conversations about it. At one point last week, we were taking in, 20 to 30 requests a day from the Cedar Rapids area, and we were up to, close to 50 volunteers at one point. We were dispatching 3, 4, 5 teams at a time, but here over the weekend and early this week, the amount of requests we're getting in for Cedar Rapids in particular is sort of dwindling down a bit. But we're starting to look into more of the smaller towns. We sent a team into Mechanicsville this past weekend, and We'd really like to reach out to a few, Palo, Fairfax, some of these other towns, and see what their needs are, because, you know, we really just want to help as many people as we can.
Well, thank you both so much for doing this, for organizing, and clearly you've got chainsaw skills that will last you the rest of your life. Matt Jorgensen, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And Channing Smith, thank you.
Thank you for having us as well.
Matt Jorgensen and Channing Smith are the leaders of the Chainsaw Gang. They're realtors with Keller Williams Legacy Group, and they live in North Liberty, but they've been organizing and traveling all over the place with their chainsaws, helping people dig out after the August 10th storm. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment about the helpers after Derecho 2020. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are meeting some of the many, many, many helpers, the people who made a difference in the wake of the August 10th derecho. You are welcome to share your stories of people who have gone above and beyond. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Laura is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Who
Who do you want to give recognition to?
Well, here in Des Moines, I and many other folks were able to donate things that folks needed in Cedar Rapids. And I was really thankful that the Black Lives Matter of Des Moines and the Supply Hive helped coordinate that and did a lot of work, volunteer work time, because we understand, as bad as it was here in Des Moines, like Cedar Rapids just got walloped. I've seen the time-lapse videos, and my heart goes out to folks there, but I just want them to know we've got them in our hearts, and we've got stuff still coming to them.
Oh, Laura, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for helping out. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And the United Way of East Central Iowa has been organizing and facilitating volunteers and relief ever since the storm hit. Kristen Roberts is the CEO of United Way of East Central Iowa. She is with us now. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, good morning, Charity. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you've been incredibly busy since August 10th and still have so much to be done. In trying to facilitate a volunteer effort of this size, especially, you know, as we learned about the incredible needs of the community in Cedar Rapids and in Linn County, tell me how you even start.
Oh, goodness. It was such a challenge. As you know, so many of us, well, all of us, didn't have power. And I just first have to give a shout out to the United Way of East Central Iowa staff. Within 48 hours, we had the Emergency Volunteer Center up and running. To put that into perspective, it took almost a month after the 2008 flood to get that volunteer center up and running. So despite having lack of communication, despite having lack of transportation for some people, we were really able to get that up and running. And it is an amazing beast and privilege all at once to be able to organize and run for our staff.
In the wake of the storm, of course, there were the immediate needs of tree removals and fixing up holes, making sure roofs weren't leaking, and food and shelter. Tell me how you mobilized that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we were able to do was get the word out pretty quickly, whether it was through social media or the press conferences, as to the Emergency Volunteer Center, and get that number out into people's hands, along with then agencies and organizations and other municipalities within Linn County as well. And what's nice is we have the capability to work with that local community-minded person who wants to help out their neighbor, or a group of volunteers who want to be able to help in some way, all the way up to the large national disaster relief organizations who are contacting us. I remember on Friday, so it must have been, Friday the 14th, I received a message from some man, and he was with the United Cajun Navy. I had never heard of the United Cajun Navy before, and come to find out, they're one of the top disaster response organizations when it comes to hurricanes in the Southeast. And so us being able to have this emergency volunteer center, plus with us, but just the national and international recognized name of United Way, they were able to reach out to us, and we were able to immediately connect them along with dozens of other national relief organizations into the needs that we had within the community.
Yeah, we didn't need a lot of boats, but we certainly needed a whole lot of help. And how does the United Way interact with federal relief? Of course, we know that there was a federal disaster declaration that came a little over a week after the storm, and Linn County is the county where that federal disaster relief has been okayed in multiple ways for the individuals who live there. How do you work with FEMA?
So one of the things that I don't think many people are aware of is it's very important to keep track of the volunteer hours that you do for the community. And we are that hub that keeps track of those hours. And the reason is there's a direct tie to FEMA dollars and the volunteer hours that we collect and report back. So that's one of the main reasons why it's very important for our area to track the volunteer hours. Again, whether you're just an individual or if you're a national disaster response organization. And that's why we have this entire system as to being able to track and put a numeric number to a numeric value to the number of hours that people are donating for our area.
So many people have acted on their own and really done amazing things in the last couple of weeks. Can they submit the hours that they spent helping out to the United Way so that those numbers are counted?
Most definitely. I can give an email right now. That's volunteer@uweci.org, or they can call a phone number, which is 224-406-1356 is the phone number that they could call and report those hours. And we would love to be able to keep track of those.
Well, it sounds like it can be important to keep track of those for further relief. You've also been managing a disaster recovery fund. Tell me about that fund and what it's used for.
So we have pretty open guidelines when it comes to the disaster recovery fund. We want to make sure that it's as flexible as possible, and we understand that there's an immediate need right now that we need to be addressing. And we also understand that as we start to kind of hit this turning point of people getting on power, what is the next step in that recovery phase? And so we understand that there's also a long-term recovery phase as people are going to need shelter for 2-3 months until they get back into their home, or maybe even longer until apartment buildings are able for people to move into. So we're keeping those areas flexible. We did announce just yesterday that we have secured and given away $40,000 and committed it to the project ReConnect, in which we're partnering with the Alliant Energy Foundation. And that project is for people who need to have the electrical boxes, weather heads, or masts still reattached to their homes. That's a message that we still want people to know is Alliant Energy will not do that. An electrician has to come and do that. And for those people where that service becomes a barrier, then we want to be able to help them be able to afford to get that done. Because if they don't get it done, it doesn't matter if the Alliant has the power back on. It's not going to be coming into their home.
So if somebody needs that help, how do they get it?
They would want to call HACAP. And I am searching for that number right now off the top of my head. But if you give me a minute, I'll be able to. Here it is. It's 319-739-0056. And that's the Project ReConnect phone number people can connect with. There are income guidelines around the applications, but we still encourage anyone who is an Alliant customer who is responsible for their own utilities, if you rent and you're responsible for your own utilities, or if you own your own home, So please call that number if you need help with getting that service mast or weatherhead or electrical box reattached.
All right. And we've thrown out several, an email address and a couple of numbers here. We will put that in the on our website, iowapublicradio.org, by the end of the day today. I'll also recap those in just a couple of minutes as well. So get your pen or pencil ready if you need help along those lines. So there are so many nonprofit organizations in the area that A, they've been helping people, but B, they're also struggling as well. A lot of nonprofits have been damaged. We know that, for example, I spoke with Horizon Food Bank, and they lost all of the food that they had in their freezer. So nonprofits are struggling. Is that, do you help them out as well as the individuals?
Most definitely. In fact, when we give from our disaster fund, we give to 501c3 organizations. And so it is those exact organizations that you're talking about that we will be working with directly to be able to help them, along with helping the individuals as well through them in our community.
Now, even after the logs have been sawed and all of the brush has been cleared, and it's going to be a few more weeks before all of that is done, the journey back is a long one. Tell me about long-range planning with United Way and how what really some of the challenges are going to be for Cedar Rapids and Linn County.
I think one of the things we've touched on already is shelter and being able to make sure that those people who have been displaced have the type of shelter that they need. And I think one of the things that we look at is so many times after disaster, the focus is immediate and there's the need right now and there's the chainsaws and there's the food and all of that comes and it comes in great, great quantities. And then it starts to trickle down when it comes to the press and the spotlight being on the disaster itself. And I think one of the things that I would just encourage people to do is just to remember these nonprofit organizations throughout the next 5, 6, 8, 9, 12 months along the way, because the underlying problems, whether it's shelter or mental health or food security, these will continue to be an underlying current. And we all know how quickly the news moves on to whatever the next disaster or whatever the next problem is. But yet these challenges will still remain within our community. And so I would just encourage people to don't just give now, but just if it's in your ability to continue your philanthropic ways throughout the future.
In talking to Lemmy Tillahoon a few minutes ago about his work with Refugee Rise, a disaster like this can really show us some of the needs that were already present in our community that we may not have been able to see or may not have been aware of. Do you feel like there are things being revealed through all of this?
I think that, and tie it in with the diversity, equity, and inclusion work that we have started, well, continued, I should say, and it has been brought to the forefront over this past spring and summer. I think that's something that's completely true. When you have a disaster, those inequities are magnified. And I think that's the point that we're trying to get at, is they're not going to go away, and we have to continue to work on them as we move forward. We're going to be rebuilding and recovering, and it can't just be things. It also has to be the way in which we approach our processes, and it has to be the way in which we engage with everyone within our community.
I think a lot of people in the last 2 weeks have really enjoyed feeling like they're making a real difference. A lot of people have jumped in and volunteered and helped people. And I know my kids went up and I went up and we served some meals, and the kids were like, that was really fun. We want to do more stuff like that. So for people who've gotten a taste of volunteering, there are still opportunities, right?
Always. There are always opportunities. And oh, just let that fire burn, right? That is one of the optimistic pieces that come out of all of this. And I was just reading an article today from iowawatch.org, and they had a story about how it was in regards to the positivity. What are the positives that you can see that has come out of this disaster? And that's one of them. Another one that I've said a couple times along the way is, you can take the child out of Iowa, but you can't take Iowa out of the child. The amount of support that has come in from Iowans who now live across the country has just been amazing, and it's almost inspiring. So yes, do not let that flame of volunteerism, if it has started in your heart, do not let that burn out, because that is what our communities need. And if you think about it, that's what makes our communities great places to live, because it's when people begin to care about where they live and they care for their neighbor and their brother and sister that makes us stronger.
So if people are looking for volunteer opportunities in the next few weeks, or even as you mentioned, we can't stop thinking about this over the next months and even year, where do they look for opportunities?
Obviously, they can come to our website and they can sign up on our volunteer link, or they could email that same volunteer at uweci.org. I also would just encourage people to think about what they're passionate about. If it's homelessness, go online and do a little research and check out the homeless shelters that we have. If it's food insecurity, how can you get plugged into, you know, helping distribute food boxes? If it's shelter, how, you know, there's just so many different organizations in our area. We are a resource-rich community in that regards. And so you can go through United Way, which we would absolutely love. But I am also here to say, just volunteering in general, find your passion and make a connection.
In the wake of the storm, there was a lack of organization in relief and some desperate need. A lot of people took it upon themselves just to raise money and buy things and go to where they felt like they could make a difference. And a lot of those people did a lot of good. I suspect that's probably not your favorite approach to aid, and as necessary as it was in the few days after the storm. Do you have any advice or caution for people about maybe how to do that in an organized, maybe even more useful way in the coming weeks?
I think one thing to think about is during huge disasters like this. This was obviously unprecedented, a word we're so sick of these days, right? It was so massive in nature that it actually does take all kinds to be able to come together and serve the community we need to serve. So if it was these small groups organizing on their own, or if it's a large organization like United Way moving together, we all play a role in being able to move our community forward. As those immediate needs start to drop off, people start to get back online with power. Those are situations in which I just would encourage people to start making sure that just whoever they're volunteering with, if it is a small organization that popped up, or if it's a large one like United Way that has years of experience behind it, make sure who you're organizing with and volunteering with, or even donating dollars to, is a solid, stable organization that you can trust. Do your homework is what I would say for people. Unfortunately, after disasters like this is when scammers and people try to take advantage of people. And you have a right to say, "This, I want to see where my dollars are being spent," or "I want to see exactly how you're helping people." So people, I don't want people to feel timid in asking those questions, because they have a right to ask those questions.
Kristen Roberts, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Charity. It's been a pleasure.
Kristen Roberts is CEO of the United Way of East Central Iowa. Again, you can get in touch with the United Way if you need help at 224-406-1356 or through HACAP 319-739-0056. And you can also check out the United Way's website for more information about volunteering or getting assistance. This is Talk of Iowa.